Welcome, everyone, to a Baseball America podcast, along with Aaron Fitt. I am John Manuel. Week four, Aaron, of the college baseball season?
I believe so.
No tweeting this weekend. You stayed home. We did not send you hither or yon this weekend to cover college baseball. But that doesn't mean a lot of college baseball news didn't happen. A lot of college baseball news happened this weekend. We'll cover it in the podcast here at BaseballAmerica.com. You can follow us on our Twitter feed, twitter.com/BaseballAmerica, obviously the Facebook page. And we want to remind you that we're coming to you from the DeMarini Demo House podcast nook, because when it comes to buying a baseball bat, DeMarini just changed the game, introducing Demo House, where you can step into the cage and hit the latest from DeMarini before you buy, because there's no substitute for hitting a real baseball or talking to people who know both bats and batting. Your demo time in the cage is free. Get the season started right and visit your Demo House today. Locations and full details can be found at DeMarini.com/Demo House. Aaron, I did my best Alan Matthews there for a second as I read that, our former colleague here at Baseball America, who always like to call this the best 15 minutes on the radio for the podcast. We're going to try to do 15 minutes on today's podcast. I'm talking like I'm doing a FedEx commercial in the 1970s.
Yeah, it's true.
UVA, Aaron, number one in number two in the preseason, number one since the opening weekend when Texas lost to New Mexico. We'll get to New Mexico later. But the Wahoos have been number one since then, and an emphatic weekend this weekend for Virginia to make its case as the number one team in the country. They go to Florida State and win the series, first with a dominating effort on Friday by Danny Hulson, then with a dramatic six-run ninth-inning comeback on Saturday. How do the Cavaliers do it, and what does this series say about Florida State?
Well, I think it basically tells us that these teams are roughly what we thought they were. They're two really, really good teams.
Crown them.
You want to crown them? Go ahead and crown them. Virginia is an offensive team, and they've got a dominant, All-America caliber Friday starter, and they've got two big guns in the bullpen with Tyler Wilson and Kevin Arrico. And really, I think that was the difference in this series, because Wilson and Arrico were able to shorten those games on Friday, and then on Saturday they were able to. Arrico came in and nailed it down in the ninth inning. Florida State didn't have that guy in the ninth inning.
And we talked about that on last week's podcast. Florida State, who is their moment of truth reliever, as Wayne Graham.
They're still trying to figure out the bullpen, and then, but then on Sunday I think Virginia's flaws were exposed, because it's not a very deep bullpen, and you got to bring Tyler Wilson back again.
And he has not bounced back as well this year.
Not
you
as
tweeted
well.
That.
Not as well. He did not against East Carolina, and it looked like he didn't bounce back as well on Sunday, because he gave up that two-run homer to Tyler Holt. So that was a back-and-forth series that really could have gone either way. I think it shows a lot about Virginia's toughness that they went down there and won that series on the road against the hottest team in the nation, really. And Florida State is, again, I don't think that there's any reason to doubt Florida State now. I mean, they're exactly what we thought they were. They're a very good offensive team with quality starting pitching and a few questions about the bullpen. But on the whole, I think that they're an Omaha-caliber team.
I'll just throw this out there right now. If Danny Hulson hits a little bit, and he's not, he's hitting .212 right now. If he starts to hit a little bit, he's going to give Anthony Rendon and some of these other jokers a run for their money as College Player of the Year.
Yeah.
That guy has a 1.04 ERA through four starts. He's been outstanding. And he hits. If he hits, he's going to come back around. And the other thing that really impresses me about Virginia's start is, keep in mind, Jared Parker is still not hitting.
Yeah.
If Jared Parker gets going, Virginia's going to be really dangerous, because he's not hitting. He has one home run this year. He's still striking out a little bit like it's Omaha last year. I would be slightly concerned if I were Virginia by the fact that Jared Parker is still swinging and missing so consistently. But Keith Werman in the lineup.
That guy is an animal.
He's hitting .550-something. And then Steve Prochia. Second best sophomore third baseman in the country.
That's it.
Right, in 2010, that's a good thing to be.
Yeah.
That just means you're not as good as .605 on base percentage Anthony Rendon, which is
right.
That's sick. Texas number two, Aaron. Taylor Youngman with a ridiculous start on Friday. But the Longhorns still struggling to score runs, 10 runs in the first three games of that series against Iowa. Hey, all respect due to Jack Dahmer and the Hawkeyes, but Texas has got to score more runs. They got to score more runs.
You're right. I mean, that's the question with Texas. And, as I said last week, I think that their offense is going to be just fine, and I think they're going to score more than enough runs to win 50 games this year and maybe a national title.
But their opponent in last year's national championship series, in the championship finals, LSU, number two coming into this week, and the Tigers go down. They lose a home series, a little reminiscent of last year's series loss against Illinois.
Yeah.
This year they lose a series at home against Kansas. Kansas is a little bit better than Illinois in baseball. They're very well coached, nothing against the Illinois coaching staff. But Richie Price, great reputation. He's won a Big 12 at Kansas before in his 6-7 years there. He is, he's made that program much more competitive than it was previously. But without Tony Thompson, without, is it Luke Ridenour? Or is it the point guard? Now I'm confusing you.
Lee Ridenour.
That was unexpected for LSU to lose that series at home, was it not?
Of course it was. There's no doubt.
Even without Anthony Rado, they weren't exactly playing like they were crippled before.
Right. I mean, LSU, this was their first test of the year of any consequence, and they failed it. I mean, you know, it's a home series against an unranked team, and an unranked team that's not at 100%, does not have its best player or its number two starter.
Yeah, Tony Thompson's not just their best player. He won the Big 12 Triple Crown last year, for people who don't know.
Exactly.
And that guy's playing with what? Well, he's not playing. What's his injury? A hip injury?
He's got, I'm checking three strikes on that.
We had that, obviously, on the college blog. But this guy is really good. Tony Thompson's really good. That's a big piece. That's as big of a piece to miss as Anthony Renato is, frankly.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it may be bigger because Thompson impacts all three games.
That's right.
What can you say about Kansas' toughness? I mean, that's the team that we really wanted to bring into the rankings this week, John, and couldn't make room for them. We'll talk about that later, I guess. But, we had some debate here about what to do with LSU in the rankings.
We wound up dropping them
five spots.
Yeah, down to seven. And Georgia Tech at three, I think, without Anthony Renato, Deck McGuire is making his case as the best starting pitcher in college baseball.
Agreed.
Who's draft eligible.
Yep.
We'll throw that out there.
Yep.
A very important caveat. Who's the best pitcher in college baseball, Aaron? Is it junior Deck McGuire? Is it sophomore Garrett Cole of red-hot UCLA, 15-0? Or is it freshman Matt Perk of now number four TCU? Are you sure?
How could you possibly forget my man Taylor Youngman?
Well, it also could be sophomore Taylor Youngman or sophomore Danny Hulton, who always already talked about. But Matt Perk, I'm sorry, Matt Perk's putting himself in the discussion. That was a gem. That's two straight weeks I think he's been lights out for TCU. And
he was good last week. He was not lights out. He pitched 5 2/3. He was pretty good.
Didn't he have a no-hitter through four or something like that? He walked a couple guys, struck out. Maybe it was 2 weeks ago that I'm thinking he was really lights out. I think it was 2 weeks ago. Either way, TCU looking pretty good, and we moved the Horned Frogs up to four.
Yeah.
Why did you advocate for that in the meeting and defend the poll ranking right now on the podcast?
Well, you know, basically LSU hadn't really done anything yet this year. They were number two based on their talent and their preseason expectations, and
the fact they were 11-0.
They were 11-0, but they hadn't faced a regional caliber team yet, and this is the first one that they faced, and it was a home series, and they lost it. And if you stack up their body of work with TCU and Florida State and Florida, it's not as good. And it's not as good as Coastal Carolina or Louisville, Arizona State or Clemson,
right,
UCLA either.
Right.
But, you know, there's only so far you can hit this team. I thought this was an okay compromise solution here. LSU is still LSU, and they're still very good. But, those other teams all have something they can hang their hat on. I mean, Florida won a series at Miami. You know, Florida State pounded Georgia and Florida.
Right.
TCU
still 5-2 against top 25 teams, even after this weekend.
Yeah. TCU, won a series at Cal State Fullerton. I mean, everyone has a signature win here except LSU.
That's pretty much it. I think you made that. I think no one came into that meeting with TCU 4 except for you, and you had the room convinced by the time we were done with that meeting. So, I mean, I think the case is very compelling. For TCU, I think Florida State's previous body of work made us really not want to hammer them or hit them in the rankings.
And they did win one out of three against the number one team in the country. It was a home series.
They didn't have a 3-2 week as well. I mean, there are mitigating factors there, but I think basically I wanted to keep them five.
Me too.
To respect what they'd done prior to this weekend series against Virginia. I don't think there's a huge harm in losing a series at home to the number one team in the country, although I do think Florida State, if they'd won that series, you could have made the case for them to be number one this week.
I think they would have been number one in my rankings.
Florida, I wanted to keep Florida State ahead of Florida. They only played one time, but Florida State did hammer them.
Yep.
I think Florida State's body of work is more impressive than the Gators right now.
I agree.
So that's why LSU slotted in at seven. And then, Aaron, from 8 to 12, every one of those teams has had a boffo season so far. Coastal, Louisville, I mean, we've talked a little bit about them on the podcast, and you obviously saw them down at the Big East Big Ten showdown. But how impressive is it? If you just really step back, here's a Big East team that went on the road in March and won a series at an SEC team.
Yeah.
That's huge.
And not just any SEC team. I mean, Ole Miss is not an easy place to play. I mean, they really pack them in there. It's a great crowd. It's a great program that's been to how many Super Regionals now in the
it's
last
like five
six
in the
years?
Last five in
the
last
six, seven,
I think it's
something
five
like
and
that.
7 years.
I mean, it's you know, you're facing one of the most dominating pitchers in the country on Friday night. And Dan McDonald, when I spoke with him last night, just raved about Pomerantz. He said it's the best pitcher that he's faced in his tenure at Louisville.
And
you
obviously,
know,
he was with Pomerantz all summer last year with Team USA
right,
as well, so
right.
He knows Drew Pomerantz well.
But they, you know, and they outlasted Pomerantz and won a classic on Friday night, and then lost Saturday and bounced back Sunday. It's and this is without Andrew Clark and without Josh Richmond,
right.
Two of their best veteran players.
Huge point, I forgot about
I
that.
I mean, that's just a very impressive weekend for Louisville. And honestly, it's the kind of weekend where at the end of the year we might look at this weekend and say this is why they've got a national seed.
I think you're right. That's a great point.
Because their conference schedule is, you know, is going to hurt their RPI a little bit, but they do have a pretty solid midweek. They play the Ohio States, the Kentuckys. But they really needed this weekend, I think, to solidify their case, assuming they take care of business in conference play.
I those are all great points. And then that's why they're ahead of Arizona State. Arizona State's 15-0 and really couldn't do anything more than they've done this year. Set them up, knock them down, you know, for Arizona State. And it's just, I think it speaks very highly of Tim Esme, the coach there. I guess he's technically the interim coach, is
right.
he not?
Yes.
He's working to get that interim tag removed from that at Arizona State. He's an alum there. He was an assistant coach, but he was not active as an assistant coach. He'd been removed by his predecessor, Pat Murphy. So that team loses their head coach in late November. They lose their number one starter in Josh Spence, who still got arm soreness and just started throwing last week, as Aaron chronicled on the college blog. And Arizona State's still 15-0, Aaron. That speaks volumes for the job that Tim Esme and his assistant coaches, Trent Jewett, is new to the program, correct?
Yep.
And Ken Knudsen, new to the program. Those guys have done a tremendous job of bringing in a lot of new players who they didn't recruit necessarily, and taking the veterans and mixing all those guys together into a 15-0 mix, and they did it this weekend beating a good Auburn team. I'm just really, really impressed by Arizona State. Granted, they've only played one top 25 team, but 15-0 is 15-0.
Yeah, and you know, they could be in the top five right now, and nobody would blink twice about it. I mean, they could be number two based on body of work and the fact that they were in Omaha last year
right.
and they're Arizona State. But, you know, as we kind of talked about last week a little bit, who do you move down? I mean, there's a dozen teams here that have all played extremely well for the most part. I mean, I know LSU and Florida State now have series losses, but you know, there's just no room here. There's not a lot of separation between the top 12 teams. I think
right.
they're all really good, and I don't think it's an indictment of Arizona State or our thoughts about Arizona State that we've got them at number 10. It's just that there's just no room.
And then UCLA. Speaking of the Pac-10, I mean, you chronicled it very well last week in three strikes. The Bruins, 13-0, best start since 1969 when Chris Chambliss was anchoring the
Bruins.
It's
their best start ever, but it's their first 13-game winning streak since 1969.
First 13-game winning streak, wow. Again, that was Chris Chambliss. They had to beat the USC dynasty to get to Omaha, and USC fans, hardcore, old-school USC baseball fans, still rue 1969. They hate Chris Chambliss because that interrupted that was a little kind of an interregnum there for USC. But then, of course, they bounced back with five straight championships. So Rod Dato, he came back from that. Tiger was pretty good. But UCLA, and they're doing it. We knew they were going to do it with pitching, but Trevor Bauer and Garrett Cole, those guys are sick.
And I'll tell you what, this is why it's nice to be UCLA right now. You go to this tournament, you know, you throw Cole against Texas A&M Corpus Christi, and he dominates.
Which is unfair for Texas A&M Corpus Christi.
And that's an improved team, by the way, that people I've spoken with have good things to say about.
Nice.
Mississippi State. You know,
the Islanders?
Islanders, that's right. You throw Trevor Bauer against Mississippi State. He dominates. Okay, so now what do you have left for Oklahoma, the ranked team in this weekend?
That's right.
We'll throw Rob Rasmussen out there. He does just fine. I mean, that's the luxury that they've got. It's just not just two guys, and their bullpen has been stellar. I mean,
so deep in the bullpen,
yeah.
And a very big deal, I think, for them, for Rob Rasmussen to pitch well. He was off to a slow start.
He had been okay. I mean,
he was walking a lot of guys.
He's walking a lot of guys. That's the only thing. But he hadn't been giving up a lot of runs. He had been striking out a lot of guys. He just hadn't worked deep into the game.
I don't think he threw in six innings in a game.
You're right.
So you can't even get a quality
this
start.
Is no doubt this is his best start of the year.
It's his best start of the year, and he brings it out against a team like Oklahoma,
yeah.
A ranked team, which speaks very well. And I think there's enough to talk about in the top 12. The rest of the poll was kind of like, eh.
Yeah.
Really, not a lot of exciting things going on. Big-time series really going on. We did hammer Rice a little bit. Hammer being maybe a little strong term. We dropped them five spots when they went 3-2 on the week. But with the exception of that 26-run outburst against Cal,
yeah.
You know, Rice really has not shown week in and week out that they had the best offense in the country, which we thought would be the best lineup in the country coming in. If not the best, one of the three best. They haven't been consistent. They haven't found anyone else to pick up when teams walk Anthony Rendon, hence that 605 on base percentage we talked about earlier.
27 walks and 5 strikeouts.
Yeah, something like that. And he is, and frankly, they're just not pitching enough. So yeah. Cal, unranked, Cal is not Kansas. So
I thought Rice had to be behind Arkansas because Arkansas last week went on the road and won 2 out of 3 at Cal.
Great point.
And this week,
great
Cal
take.
Comes to Rice and splits 4 games. I mean, you know, Rice, the body work, just they're 10-7. Right.
Yeah, 10-7.
It's just not a very impressive body of work. The best win they do have that one win against TCU, but I think they're fine in the top 15. But it was okay to hit them a few spots after a 3-2 week.
East Carolina, other team, we dropped them 7 spots. The Pirates are 8-6. They've outscored their opponents by all of 2 runs this year. I'm a little concerned about their offense, Aaron. They're not scoring runs like they need to.
And they've played a very tough schedule. And I want to make sure
schedule.
That we highlight that because we like to reward teams that play tough schedules.
Well, that's why they're still ranked.
That's why they're still ranked.
If they weren't playing a good schedule, they wouldn't be close to being ranked because
yeah.
They're 8-6 and they aren't scoring. They scored 12 runs all week. You can give them a little bit of a pass when you're going 3 time zones, but by Saturday rolls around, you've been out there a couple games,
yeah.
You got to adjust to being on the West Coast. And they didn't adjust. They still didn't score.
And frankly, going 1-3 against Pepperdine, which had been struggling.
Still 6-9
on
the year.
Cal State Northridge, which has improved, but still a team that a top 15 team should beat.
Honestly, not a team that is held in high regard on the West Coast, to be honest with you. Pepperdine may be having a bad year, but people on the West don't speak highly of Cal State Northridge like they do about some of the other programs out there. So, I mean, it is what it is. It's not Mike Batesel, Robert Fick, and Adam Kennedy running around anymore for the Matadors. So it's a little different deal than it was in the late 90s. When Cal State Northridge has a winning record, wake me up.
That said, Northridge is, I mean, you know, I want to give them a little bit of credit because they've gotten off to a decent start, and they're improved. I just think that they are improved.
Improvement's a relative term. They're going to be a bottom of the Big West team again. That's a game that East Carolina has to win. We left Stanford in the rankings. North Carolina dropped 7 spots as well. The Tar Heels lose to Duke in what can only be called a construction zone at Durham Bulls Athletic Park. It's a Triple-A ballpark. Duke is using that as their home field for certain series. They did have good crowds there this weekend, which is very impressive considering the fact that Duke obviously had success in the ACC basketball tournament. There were a lot of North Carolina fans there on Saturday. Obviously, North Carolina not a factor in basketball this year. But, that was uncomfortable for both teams, in my opinion. There was a lot of smell of paint thinner in the air. That was an uncomfortable situation. A difficult place to watch a ball game this weekend. So Duke already moving one game this week to carry the National Training National Training Center down there. We'll see how things go for Duke. They're kind of playing without a home field this year. They already don't have a ton of margin for error. They're a bubble team again, but they played very spunky on Saturday, and they're very strong up the middle. With Will Ponica Worms, that's not his first name, is it?
Yeah.
Will Ponica Worms in center field is like a better version of Alex Hassan. Jake Lemmerman, a junior shortstop, a very good college shortstop, and the athletic Marcus Stroman, who threw hard on Saturday but got barreled a lot. So North Carolina lost.
He apparently
that game.
Made a game-saving defensive play in the finale
Sunday.
On Sunday.
But he was throwing 92-93, but he got squared up quite a bit. I tell them the bottom line is North Carolina scored some runs this weekend, but this is not the same North Carolina team that went to Omaha 4 years in a row. And them going to Omaha this year would be a real surprise, I think. So.
Yeah, and you know, was it a 2-3 week for North Carolina? They did have a midweek loss to William & Mary where they got shut out. Their body work isn't great either. They do have a sweep of Michigan. That's their best
right.
series right there. We kept them in the rankings. We really wanted to bring in Kansas or New Mexico. Those were the two teams we really wanted to make room for, and we just couldn't do it.
In a different week, Aaron, some other teams could have been in this week's rankings as well. Texas A&M wins a weekend series against Washington State, a tight series, spoke well for both teams. Looks like it was pretty well played.
And they're for real. I like their team a lot.
Washington State or A&M?
Both of them, but especially Texas A&M.
I agree. Both those teams are pretty nice out of the bullpen with the lefty. Is it Conley for Washington
Conley
State?
Conley for Washington State.
You got Cal State Fullerton getting back on the beam this week. Not ready to rank them yet. 7-7, but they did win three games in a row this weekend.
Which is, I believe, the first time this year they had even won back-to-back games.
Correct. And they only gave up 5 runs in those last three games against San Diego State, San Diego, and Alabama, Birmingham. And then just watch out for Western Kentucky. I mean, took a midweek loss against Mississippi State, but on the road, in conference, swept New Orleans, which I would imagine that's a little bit of a dispirited New Orleans team. It's the last year they're playing Division I before the program drops to D3.
And also a win against Tennessee in there for Western
Kentucky
that's
right.
Midweek. Southern Miss is back on the right track. I think that Alabama could be ranked. I mean, there's plenty of teams that could be ranked. There's just only 25 spots. We debated bumping an idle Stanford out, decided that you really should have to play your way out. I mean, we prefer not to move down a team that didn't play for finals. I'm not going to penalize you for studying. So,
although maybe we should. We'll think about that one again next week. Reggie sent us an email. We'll have to get to that next week, Reggie, because we're out of time on this week's podcast. A little bit of a time constraint, which is unusual for us, but I hope people don't mind. A little bit of a shorter, sweeter college podcast this week. And I also had email from Nick and Tom last week, actually. So we haven't gotten to those, but we will try to get to those emails next week here on the Baseball America podcast. So when it comes to buying a baseball bat, DeMarini just changed the game. Introducing Demo House, where you can step into the cage and hit the latest from DeMarini before you buy. Because there's no substitute for hitting a real baseball or talking to people who know both bats and batting. Your demo time in the cage is free. Get the season started right. Visit your nearest Demo House today. Locations and full details can be found at demarini.com/demohouse. Aaron, I didn't need the copy. I could have done that without the copy. I've read it enough times. For Aaron Fitt, I'm John Manuel. We'll see you next time on the Baseball America podcast. So long, everybody.